Hello and welcome to FinTech Impact. I'm your host, Jason Pereira. Today's show, I have the good fortune of having a very good friend of mine, Brian Portnoy, on, and a new friend, Andrew Smith-Lewis, on to talk about their joint venture, Lydia. Lydia is bringing behavioral finance to the world of AI or vice versa and helping advisors become more human through technology. And with that, here's my interview with Brian and Andrew. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Pleasure. I'm going to put one of you on the spot and say, okay, Brian or Andrew, feel free to tell us the elevator pitch on Lydia.
I'll go. So Lydia, as we imagine it, is an always-on empathic collaborator for financial advisors to drive better conversations with clients in order to drive better life outcomes as well as better business outcomes. It's built to channel some of the most interesting insights from the behavioral sciences and use them through a really easy to scale portal to help advisors become even more human. If the typical script is that technology can replace people and then the people move on, this is not that. This is the opposite. This is about amplifying human brilliance and using technology to do so.
Excellent. We're going to dive into that because that is quite the mission statement. So before we get there, let's talk about both of your histories. Okay. So I think normally I talk about the history of the company, but I think the background of both of you is vital to understanding Lydia and the importance of this. So we're going to start with both of your backgrounds and then we'll talk about the origin story of Lydia. So Brian, I'm going to go back to you again and give us your background. You published many books, but let's focus on various topics. Let's focus specifically on the background in behavioral finance and what led to the point where Lydia was created.
Yeah, sure. The quick background is that I have a pretty long investing career. And at a certain point, 10, 15 years ago, it was clear that behavioral science and behavioral finance was going to give me that extra level of insight into building better portfolios, helping clients. And I got so into it, I started writing books in the space. So I have now three books I call broadly in the field of applied behavioral finance. And one of them called The Geometry of Wealth, a broader meditation on where money fits into a meaningful life, but also specifically how financial planners can help their clients make better decisions, achieve better outcomes. That book, The Geometry of Wealth, I at a certain point a few years ago transformed into a coaching and content platform called Shaping Wealth. And now we work with thousands of financial advisors, six continents. There's a global movement toward just deeper human relationships in the context of financial advice. And we equip advisors for that part of their journey. So behavioral finance in the cognitive science sense of making better decisions, emotional intelligence in the sense of better understanding yourself and then better understanding and conversing with others, positive psychology in the spirit of understanding kind of the science behind what leads to a happy and meaningful life. We identify dozens and dozens of skills and micro actions under those umbrellas, and we deliver them to clients, financial advisors, who in turn drive better client experiences, but also build a bigger, more profitable commercial enterprises.
Excellent. And I will say, for any advisor listening, The Geometry of Wealth is absolutely a must listen, let alone Shaping Wealth's outsourced chief behavioral officer platform is a must subscribe. So I will say that that's how Brian and I got connected over Twitter, and I shared my passion for his book. And I think that's how we became friends. That was Brian. Andrew, give us your history.
I think that the most important thing is what I've been passionate about, what I've dedicated the last 25 years of my life to. I've always been started with curiosity about learning and started to get very passionate about how we learn. Reason being is that if you think about education broadly, whatever it is, educating financial advisors, educating high school kids, educating doctors. It starts with the what, the content, right? We're all very focused on you need the right content for the right job, which is clear. And then with the advent of the internet and technology and digital transformation, it became where learning happens. Is it online? Is it in the theater of operations? Is it in a corporate setting? Is it async or sync? But how we learn is largely been ignored. It's the last mile, right? And as we leave it up to the individual to figure out, how do you get stuff into your head and keep it there? And that always struck me as an opportunity. It's like, why isn't there more there? And I, long time ago, I had my eyes open to a bunch of research in learning and memory. Turns out there are a lot of people who study the way things get encoded, stored, and retrieved from our heads. And that is on the cognitive science side, on the neuroscience side. And so I was fascinated with the fact that there's a lot of really good science about how memory occurs, how learning occurs, what we can do to accelerate learning, but it doesn't get applied broadly. And the last people to get the memo are the educators, which is ridiculous. Long story short, I built an organization out of an algorithm around how can you deliver information so that people attend to it, so that they can learn it, so they can store it, and they can retrieve it. It was content agnostic. It worked for anything. And it was designed to really accelerate learning and performance. Built that into an organization that served over 6 million users, from college students to grammar school kids to special force medics in the U.S. Army to Air Force pilots and financial advisors, and was just fascinated with this idea of how we learn. Began using AI in that system to do things like predict memory and predict the decay, predict forgetting. And then, long story short, ended up working in wealth management, going in with a client of ours, Case, a wonderful company that is in the alternative investment space, launched a product called Case IQ, which was designed to accelerate learning and memory for financial advisors for complex products such as hedge funds, private equity, private credit. Met Brian along the way, and all that. We'll tell our origin story there, but really got into this idea of unlocking human potential in wealth management, originally through learning. And then when this generative AI stuff came up, it was my revenge of the nerds moment because I'd spent so much time in AI. I've got 10 patents in the intersection of AI and cognitive science, and jumped on with a new company, Ally Studios, focused on taking all that applied research in learning and memory and thinking about how do we really ignite what's best about us? How do we become more human in the age of AI? And that's what I'm super passionate about. And that's what I have the privilege of working with Brian on through Lydia.
Yeah, it's amazing. Lots of this resonates with me because I think to myself about revelations when I was a student, let alone when I was a professor. And it's one of these things of the part of it was understanding the way the professor was trying to teach you in the first place in order to fully absorb things. And then when I became the professor, was about different people's abilities to absorb and different methods of communication and whatnot. And I think a lot of success and failure in any form of education, just being able to figure out how to put yourself on the same language level or understanding level as that. So it's what you're saying there about how we learn is just so resonates with me. And all right, so basically, yeah, the behavioral finance expert, you got the AI guy with an appreciation for technology. It's not just about technology, but it's about humanity. How does peanut butter and jelly come together in this case?
So I'll go first quickly. Andrew and I met a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, through some good mutual friends. And it was very obvious to me from the first conversation that this was not only a guy who got it, but a guy who has a vision. And in the meanwhile, at Shaping Wealth, we're a learning platform. So the types of things that Andrew had built, is building, deeply resonated. And his expertise there is so much beyond mine. We began a conversation about how do we really connect with our audience of financial advisors? Because that role, Jason, as well as anyone, is changing relatively quickly. Just being a technical expert in investments or insurance or taxes, that's table stakes, in some cases table stakes at best. And now it's more about how do you show up and help guide your client through difficult life decisions and transitions over years and decades. One of my partners, Neil Bage, and I had already been talking for a while about having some technology on our platform that could help people help our clients search the content and maybe accelerate some of the coaching experiences. But Andrew really turned the light on in a room that was dark to me prior. And we began to think about generative AI. Old news to Andrew, new news to me, like most people over the last year and a half, couple years. And I think we quickly recognized that his technology plus our content combined create potentially a powerful, unique, scalable engine for the entire global wealth advisory community at exactly the time that community needs better ways to not only connect with their clients, but to understand who they are and where they're going through this journey.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I refer people to your platform of Shaping Wealth, I often basically say, look, taking from our conversations in the past, you can learn about behavioral finance by learning about a bunch of checklists of behavior, or you can learn about how to actually practically apply that in your practice. And that is fuzzy. That is gray. That is a little bit amorphous, and it's a skill setting building. And you've been building up a library of that for quite a while. And talk about like the timing of this happening. You have built up this library of this content that is valuable and can be harvested. And then the tool that basically can harvest it, the best tool that we've ever seen for being able to harvest it and deploy it in a easy to basically accommodate or learn from methodology presents itself to the universe.
Yeah.
Around the same time. Right.
So let me just start, but Andrew should finish. From the Shaping Wealth point of view, yeah, we've been building out this library. The goal wasn't for the library to be big. It's just that over time, we're passionate about this. We create a ton of original content, written content, synchronous coaching content. We're doing a lot of things for a lot of advisory firms. And from a business owner's point of view, one of the questions is, how do I scale this? How do I connect with more people? And it's not necessarily going to come from hosting another live seminar. We want to get this into the world because we think it's important work, the work that we're very proud of. So for example, financial advisor is planning for a conversation later in the day. And it's with a couple that they've known for many years. So there's some familiarity with them. But at the same time, it's going to be a big conversation. It's about retirement or legacy planning or their kids. And chances are that there's going to be a Shaping Wealth webinar on that topic at that moment is zero. What's a higher probability is that there is a conversational agent who can interact with the advisor, and the advisor, she can say, hey, I know these people, but we're thinking about their legacy. I want to dip into the psychology of that topic. I want to plan for a better conversation. Why not have AI, and we can make it more specific, a series of conversational agents that are fine-tuned to talk to the advisor and say, hey, have you thought about these topics? To say, would you like to role play? How about you be you, but then you be them, and let's work it from both sides of the table. So that's one of a dozen use cases, but it's clearly a place where Shaping Wealth can get its content and coaching into the world in a way that would otherwise be impossible.
So I want to come back to use cases in a minute, but I want to go back to Andrew here. And I want to talk to Andrew. I want you to talk to me about what it is you saw when you discovered the content library that Brian had been building. What really resonated with you, and what made you see the need to apply what it was you were doing to what he had?
Yeah, a couple of things resonated with me. When I joined this wealth management firm, I ran innovation and growth for Case. I was a stranger in strange land, right? This was not my tribe. I didn't grow up in wealth management. And what immediately struck me about Brian's approach was it felt like home to me because he came from the psychology of money, the psychology of people and their relationship with this very, very complex thing called money. And that made sense to me because my background was in cognition and thinking about people's thinking and their relationship with things. So that hit me right away. And then I read Brian's book. First, it was just a courtesy because, okay, I'll read his book. He's a nice guy. But then I was really taken with the book. The Geometry of Wealth changed my view for myself in terms of my relationship with money and what I was after. And this concept of really, what does it mean to be wealthy? What are we really going for? What is enough? What does that look like? Is it just about more? And so much of media is just more. And that's not what Brian's about. So both from the coming from a really intelligent, cognitive-based approach, and also having the right sort of almost moral compass in terms of what we should be doing. It's not about get more. It was just like, what does enough look like for you? And it's different for you than it is for me. You have to tune into that to really get happy, to be content. And that's what life is about. And that really struck me because so much of finance seemed to be about more as opposed to being happy. And so that really resonated with me. Now the question is, how do you scale that message? So my initial conversations with Brian was about, well, what do you do? Right? Do you drop this into a traditional, do you build a masterclass of finance? And what does that look like? Or how... is there a way to scale and reach people and really drive behavioral change, right? Because this isn't you just read a thing and now you're off to the races. This is about persistence. This is about creating engagement and repetition and experience. And the challenge was, how could you do that with something this good?
And so it's fantastic. You have a wonderful tool for delivery and for discovery and for creating different methodologies for how to interact with data, with information, and you had this wellspring of information. So Brian already started talking about some of the capabilities, specifically like ideas of being able to search for the contents, one thing that's simple enough. But even something like role play, like being able to have a dialogue as if to rehearse. What else, current state of Lydia, what are the value propositions that you are basically pointing out to people right now with Lydia?
I think it's the difference between what and how. Like you just said search, which is fair enough. I think we're all so used to searching. And I think a lot of people are approaching AI with that framework and lens of search. We've been conditioned to ask questions of Google. And a lot of people are looking at AI as an extension of that, as maybe a better search. One of the things that's unique about Lydia is it's not just about finding answers. It's about becoming better at something. It's the how, right? It's the, when I walk away, when I'm not using Lydia, I am a better advisor. I am ready to have better conversations. It's not if I'm not using Lydia, I don't have benefit. So we really want this, it's called transference of training. We want people to walk away better, stronger, faster, having and enriched, having spent time with Lydia. So she's designed not just to give you answers, but to engage you in thinking, right? To get you to think, to get you to think different, to get you to change the approach that you're going to take with a client, and to give you a safe space to practice that, right? Safe in the sense that you're just talking to Lydia, right? There's no harm and you can experiment and she can give you feedback and you can go off the rails and she can, you know, give you some guidance there. So I think that's very unique. The other core thing is that Lydia is not just a grand oracle in the sky. Lydia builds relationships with people. And this is a very key thing. And it's something at Ally Studios that we're putting a tremendous amount of energy into is how do you inject some memory and rapport into a system? So when Jason is talking to Lydia or Brian is talking to Lydia, the conversations are different. And it might even be the same subject, but they're based upon the fact that Lydia has been through conversations with Jason, unique to conversations with Brian, understands objectives, can be deterministic, has a growing data stream of memories associated with Jason, different from Brian. So we've ring-fenced the shaping wealth content. That's first and foremost, right? When you're talking to Lydia, you're not asking ChatGPT for advice. You're talking to the shaping wealth content. This is necessary, but insufficient for the full vision. Next, she's creating data, a codex just for Jason's interactions and just for Brian's interactions. And that's very unique. And we think that over time, that's going to build tremendous value because it's not just this one-way conversation. It's an entity that knows you. And we think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, there's two key things I want to go back to. You said there, you talked about. One is the differentiation. I think in general, most AI has been looked at as a efficiency utility, right? It's been about doing work. This is a learning tool as purest form, right? Like essentially you're taking a very defined knowledge base and you're using it. Your goal is not just for me to create, and you will do this, create like a blog post on a behavioral finance topic. It's not that. That is lower hanging fruit of AI. It is the fact that you're actually trying to better the end user in their abilities, which is, I'd say, more unique than fully unique, but it's a completely different way of thinking about artificial intelligence versus what we've seen from generative AI to date is what I'm thinking. And then the second piece is that the reality is, like you mentioned ChatGPT, the key here is that one of the things I've talked about when it comes to AI is broad versus narrow, right? ChatGPT gets things wrong all the time, right? Because it's trying to service the needs of the entire universe. And yeah, it may get to know me a little bit, but it also is learning off everybody else. And what you've done here is you've narrowed the zone of attack to solely like behavioral finance, human interactions, money, those concepts, those types of traumas, those types of things. And the ability for those two things to come together to really create purposeful learning for the end user is superior than anything else that is on the market or probably will be on the market anytime soon, because simply who's got that knowledge base, who's got that perspective, who's got that tool to basically actually make me better at this thing, which so few people are actually even frankly, qualified enough to talk about. Brian, you put together a little dream team of your own at Shaping Wealth with the experts you have there. And frankly, if I had to think about who are the top five people I would ever reach out to for a question regarding any of these topics, you got the like, four. Right?
So, I got to leave some talents off to the side. But I have a dream team for sure. Love what Andrew said about, and what Jason, what you followed up and emphasized on, this being a designed learning experience. And the fact that Andrew's technology not only makes your typical ChatGPT type experience really cool, you almost feel like you can be in a dialogue with it depending on the way you prompt it, but it doesn't know who you are. You can look at a chat history, but that's not really anything. And so I think what really compelled me about Andrew's technology and vision is that you're not only seen and heard, you're also remembered. And so imagine you're a financial advisor on a platform with 39 other advisors or 712 other advisors. The industry's become so large now. When you dip into Lydia, who's going to be an always-on companion, it's not going to be tucked away in the Shaping Wealth ecosystem. Andrew can speak to the integration frameworks. But Lydia will be there and remember the last time you spoke to them. It'll remember the fact that, oh, I spoke to the Millers about their legacy planning. How did that go? What can we learn from that? It's really amazing. And I want to plant two flags just so the audience understands some of the important underlying contrasts here. The first is Seth Godin's distinction between learning and education. When people hear learning, they sometimes might hear education. Not many of us want to go back to school. I do, but I'm weird. Yeah, but people don't want that. And so old school education, didactic, one-way lecturing, learning facts and figures, and even bridging into AI, prompting an AI to give you answers, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what Seth Godin, the marketing genius and just wise person, calls learning. It's a two-way thing. It's truly engaging. The second distinction is between efficiency and effectiveness. Our first and foremost goal with Lydia is not to make advisors more efficient so that they can have higher throughput. This isn't about velocity of client engagement or sales. This is about connecting with people, which in my view, given what I've done for many years now, has enormous commercial benefit in terms of referral-worthy moments, wallet share, overall revenues, and profitability for the firm. But you get there in a distinct path as opposed to velocity of throughput. But to put a, just circle this, the designed learning experience of Lydia is what I think we are just so jazzed about and what we're leaning into.
And if I could add to that, just because I think it's a really important point, it's learning through dialogue. The beauty of generative AI is these dialoguing systems, we're all a little bit fooled by fluency or infatuated with this, but it truly is the ability to personalize education and learning, which has never existed. And I agree, it's love learning, didn't necessarily love school, but still have nightmares about waking up in a high school class with a thing due. We all have those experiences. That dialogue experience is amazing. And the personalization, that memory component, and I'll admit, this is a journey, not a destination. We have not cracked the code on unlocking memory perfectly in AI. I have 25 people working on this, cognitive scientists, AI researchers. And I spent all day on this. And I'll tell you, the first moment that this thing worked, I was in a conversation with Lydia on something. And she says to me, how was your anniversary dinner with your wife? And I got such a chill. I built this thing, right? I knew what this is doing. But the first time that thing just prompted me with how was the anniversary dinner with your wife, I just got such an amazing chill. So it's bringing that at scale is just going to, I think, unlock remarkable things for advisors, and it really focusing on the meaningful, not the mundane. That's what's really key here. We've got to focus on what matters.
Absolutely. And one of the things I love about all this is that it is on trend of the biggest underlying trend of the industry, which has always been for decades to move away from the commoditized actions and sales processes of product and access to securities and markets and all this other stuff, which frankly is systematic and easily automated and has been on that trend forever, and moving this ever closer to just really focusing on the underlying reason why clients go to anyone, which is to basically be okay, to basically know that they're going to live the life they want to live, to help them self-actualize. And the skills to date that have been trained, that have been used to train advisors, have largely been about the how it gets there, not the why and how we deal with the human being across from us. So it's been a gaping hole that has been addressed more recently by various professionals and experts like Brian and other efforts. But being able to now, I think, like you said, change the dynamic of the learning methodology in the conversation. And also, I think the other thing is too, it's not the same as school in terms of dedicated learning where I sit down, I got a test, I got all this other stuff. The fact that I'm using it if I'm using it day to day in interaction, in preparation, in contemplation, that is just a natural experience learning. And that is that resonates and sticks and feels far less onerous than to many people in general. And it's more practical.
I agree. And I think you also made a very good point about narrowing the field. Lydia's focused on behavioral finance and the great content of Shaping Wealth. Lydia is not a grand oracle that answers everything. And because of that, we call it semantic routes that are built into the system that lets it be deterministic in such a way that if an advisor steps outside of the lane of what Lydia knows, she's not going to make up an answer. She's going to tell that advisor, hey, this is not my lane of expertise. She can also be trained to avoid certain topics. Different firms have different policies, and compliance is a very important thing for us. And to know that this firm doesn't want advisors talking about crypto, and this firm doesn't want advisors talking about whatever the subject is, that can be customized as semantic routes within Lydia, so that in the course of a conversation, if something comes up, Lydia can be like, hey, that's outside of the range of what we're supposed to talk about, or you need to go talk to somebody else about that. That's our firm policy. So I think it's really important to understand that we can layer in these guardrail frameworks on top of the AI. And I think that's going to be quite important as we scale Lydia out.
So Lydia is not going to come up with a fake legal brief. Got it.
No.
That guy will forever be legend in the world of generative AI.
Correct.
He's the pizza day equivalent of to the crypto world. Okay. Seriously. So that's where we are today. As much as you're willing to peel back the curtain and talk about the aspirations, like, where do you both see this going?
We're well on the path to fully executing everything that we're talking about right now. And I think that in and of itself is going to be revolutionary. But I think, and on the technology and big picture side, Andrew's always about 6 months ahead of me. So I think he's always, finally, he got it. But for me, the dawning revelation is on the business intelligence front, and that Lydia really has both a bottom-up and a top-down component. Everything that we've been talking about so far is strictly bottom-up, in the sense that you are a financial advisor, and here is a learning environment in which you can prepare for better conversations, more deeply engage clients, write better newsletters and emails, generate psychological insight into your clientele, a variety of different things. But imagine then you are the director of wealth management or the head of an advisory team, and whether there's 3 or 30 or 300 or 3,000 advisors on your platform, you can ask Lydia, what's going on? What's my team talking about? What are the big conversations that are taking place? What are the big themes? What kind of answers are we giving? Does my team seem to be sufficiently trained in having the hard conversations our clients are coming to us with? And I mean, joking aside, Andrew's built a whole separate technology stack to deal with this sort of what I'm calling top-down issue. But it's right there to lean into. So if a firm with 30 advisors is having a bunch of conversations, you can aggregate the content and flow of those conversations in a way where you can have a top-down view of what's happening. There's the possibility of connecting CRM, meeting notes, transcripts, and the like. So you can begin to develop some business intelligence that I think heretofore was unimaginable.
And I would say it's interesting because it brings up the problem, behavioral problem of expressed versus demonstrated preferences. And I think one of the data is always, it's always better to get the hard data than it is to ask people, what are they talking about, whatever else it is. And I think back to the innovation of SoundScan in the 90s, where Billboard used to call up record stores and say, what are you selling? And then when SoundScan came along, suddenly they discovered, wait a sec, country music and rap sales are way off the charts compared to what we thought they were. People's biases were basically impacting what they were telling us. And that led to big radio stations opening around those themes. And I think we get to see, you probably have this, we likely have similar patterns when basically advisors are asked for what do clients care about, right? Like it's, are we really recording? We're not recording and tracking anything. So I think the ability to go to the core data is going to result in some very interesting revelations around what really are clients asking about? What are they, what are we telling them? What are they coming back with? And where is the disconnect? So I'm interested to see how that all pans out for you guys in the future. And I very much will be following eagerly. So before we wrap up, there's three questions I asked to end on a positive note and get you thinking. And you can get a, throw it out and see who wants to ask the first answer first, and we can go back and forth. First question is, if you had one wish for something to change in your company or the industry as a whole, what would it be? That's the stumper. Pointed at Andrew.
I wish we could get to a future state a bit faster. It's so interesting. Every technology that comes out is met with so much fear and anxiety. And you can go back to from bicycles and people being afraid the bicycle was going to give you bicycle face from the acceleration of driving on these things.
I didn't even know that, but that's hilarious.
Everything is, I think it's called the pessimistic.org is like a collection of every technology from the newspaper, printing press, bicycles. We're always there and we're always screaming and yelling, right? You think about like financial transactions on the internet, like people were screaming, I'm never going to put my credit card on the internet. That would be like the worst. Can you imagine? And now we lose our minds when we can't hook our bank accounts up to every service out there. I bring this up because when we get to the moment where we recognize that the more we give AI access, the better that AI is going to be at helping us achieve what we're really after, about really improving our lives and helping to lean into what makes us more human and accelerating that. And I'd love to get to that moment sooner. I'd love to be able to look back and say, we've seen this movie before and we need to get to that moment faster.
So I'll give my short answer, which is that, and this is very specific to Shaping Wealth and Applied Behavioral Finance, which is that I wish the industry, the profession would finally drop its obsession with behavioral biases. We have an incredibly rich literature, starting with Kahneman and Tversky, who wrote at length about heuristics and biases. But then the wealth management industry, in particular, focused only on the low-hanging, easy fruit and said, hey, look at the 27 or 42 ways in which our clients are flawed. And let's try to diagnose and fix them. And here in 2024, my team and I are still fighting the battle on this front where we're trying to explain that these aren't biases in the negative sense. These are evolutionary adaptations that are there for a reason. And that if you're truly interested in understanding your clients as humans, not just as clients or customers, you're going to lean into why are they the way that they are. Not that they're broken. They're actually normal. Economists have a fancy word called irrational. That's code for stupid. And we've just too easily adopted that framework. So yeah, the different world I imagine is one in which I don't have to explain that three times a week.
Yeah, what's the saying? There's no behaviors irrational when you understand the context of where the decision came from or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And as for anyone looking for it, it is archive.org. And the first article I see is The Forgotten Beeper Wars, where 30 years ago, parents were worried about the impact of beepers on their kids, which is...
Oh, the innocent days.
Oh, yes. Yes.
They worried about being like too cool or too nerdy.
One of the things is talking about their use in drugs, which I mean, and fine. Yeah, whatever. I've watched The Wire. I know that was true.
Yeah.
Second question is, what's been the biggest challenge in getting Lydia to where it is to date? And I think you probably both have, I think, frankly, you can look at it, that question either as Lydia or from your individual perspectives on what you both bring to the table.
let me try to answer it narrowly from the view of me and shaping wealth. It's trying to get up to speed quickly on everything Andrew and his team have built so that we can make the contribution that I want to and that we need to. For example, we talked earlier about these codices, these bodies of knowledge, these sources of truth, and those are distinct from the underlying LLMs that Andrew's technology can dip into in a very sophisticated way. And so while not every single insight and data point is going to come from Shaping Wealth content, the Shaping Wealth content and worldview is going to shape the environment in which the LLMs are queried. And Andrew might even correct me here for not putting that as well as I could. But it's been, yeah, I guess hard, challenging, but not in a bad way. This is the fun part. This is work of how do we, over millions of original words that we've written in our careers and created at Shaping Wealth, how do we define these versions of truth that we want to show up that are going to be most effective in being a guide for financial advisors?
Andrew?
I think that for me, the challenge is to stick to the first principles of what Lydia needs to do and to not give into the siren call of all of the exciting things going on with AI and all of the opportunities for where Lydia can go. There's just, we're early innings in all of this AI stuff. Whether the curve is exponential or not, it's pretty damn close. And so every day there's new opportunities and new things to integrate. And so trying to keep a young team focused on, wait, we've got to get these basic things done before we add on and add on. I have weekly sprints with my team and they're like, look at this. And what if she did this? And what if she did? So it's like it's an interesting challenge to pull back and keep it focused and really make sure that we nail those first initial core offerings. And once we get that done, we can build on top of that. So it's the excitement of the field plus what's going on in AI, just keeping it on pace.
Such a challenge in emerging technology because
you want them
to be excited about what can happen, but it's all meaningless if the fundamental steps aren't taken. And then it becomes a decision about what it is to focus on. And think back to Steve Jobs' quote about his job was primarily as a curator, right? It was about, the term I use in what the companies I advise is I'm the killer of squirrels. At the end of the day, people get distracted by that squirrel and say, okay, tell me how that's leading to enterprise sales or the underlying fundamental code that you are basically trying to get to what you're doing. Don't get me wrong. It's great. I'm glad you're thinking that way, but you got to get the fundamentals done. So
it's really.
And the last question I have for you is what excites you the most about what it is you're working on and keeps you getting out of bed in the morning to keep on fighting the good fight?
I feel like we just talked about it for almost an hour. Lydia and what it can possibly do is absolutely motivating rather than stating that obvious thing. In the core Shaping Wealth enterprise, we're just making leaps and bounds now globally with advisory firms who want to lean into human first financial guidance. And I just onboarded Dr. Meg Lertz to my team. So she's now the fourth of four partners at the firm. And really just getting up in the morning, jumping on the Slack, jumping on calls, seeing them, figuring out what type of things we're going to be doing over the course of the week in terms of running a coaching session or writing a blog or imagining the next element of Lydia. It's just endless set of exciting things to do. It's overwhelming, but in a good way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
For me, again, I love what Brian's doing, and I have a contagious passion when I'm around Brian for this field, but I don't wake up every day and my first thought is not behavioral finance. But I think a lot about where we are with AI and this AI revolution, and there's just so much noise about, is it for good? Is it going to destroy us? Are we headed towards an extinction event? I think that's a red herring for a more fundamental issue in that we're at a point where we need to make a choice about defining humanity's future. And we're either going to allow organizations and AI to be used to surveil and replace us at scale, or we're going to harness its power in a way that amplifies human brilliance. And that's what the firm Ally Studios that I've built, that's what we're about. We're on the side of humans before machines and amplifying human brilliance. And I can't think of a better example to lead with than Lydia for amplifying human brilliance. And I think going into a field like finance where there's so much emphasis on automation, there's so much automation coming at advisors and people in this ecosystem, to hold out a beacon of hope that we can use AI to really get behind people and push just gets me so excited. So I love this as an example of what other industries need to be doing and thinking about to keep us ahead of AI.
It is going to be an interesting journey with many decisions to be made and finally a technological innovation that everybody didn't think was going to destroy us. We are hardwired to be afraid of the unknown, so it's not surprising that people are going to think that. Gentlemen, as always, it was a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to do this on record this time. So very much appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Excellent. So that was Brian Portnoy and Andrew Smith-Lewis of Lydia. If you are, frankly, if you are an advisor, you should take the time to take a look at this, because frankly, it is quite the unparalleled opportunity to elevate your game and actually get closer to the core of what truly matters to your client and learn those skills of what's going to do. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on an Apple podcast, Spotify, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, take care.
This podcast was brought to you by Woodgate Financial, an award-winning financial planning firm catering to high-net-worth individuals and their families. To learn more, go to woodgate.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, or find more episodes at jasonperera.ca.